That was an interesting call-in mode, Lori Beth. Wow, welcome to the Omega Leader Series show. We were a little bit behind the eight ball getting started here today. A little bit of technical difficulty calling in, but we're excited to be on the show with you and looking forward to sharing with you, Lori Beth, about these two topics around Omega Leadership. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Finally, right?
Right.
So Lori, we've been talking about Jesus as an Omega Leader on this show for quite some time now, looking at the blendedness of a leader taking both the Alpha style of management and the Beta style of management, merging that into something that you have coined the Omega Leader profile, which using Jesus as a model for leadership. So we're going to continue our thoughts around that today. Again, we apologize for the delay in getting to the show, but we are glad to be here again to talk with you about Jesus as the Omega Leader. We're going to jump into this first topic. He was in over his head. What were you thinking as you wrote and penned these words, Lori Beth?
Well, I think sometimes we think that leaders have it all together and that they know exactly what they're doing moment by moment. Certainly some leaders, most leaders try to convey that feeling to their followers. And yet, as I've encountered leaders at different levels of society, what I find is that the ones who are really honest admit that they're in over their head.
Hmm.
And in this particular chapter, I share that I was sitting at a meeting and there was a CEO who had 15,000 employees, a nun who had just started a spiritual retreat center, a neurosurgeon, and some other people, very high-level CEOs and leaders, and they admitted that they just prayed nonstop. And one woman who's the CEO with 15,000 employees, she said, well, I start out on my knees in the morning, and then I pray again at 9 a.m., and then I pray at 10, and then I pray at noon, and then I pray at 3, and then I pray at 6. She said, because frankly, I'm in over my head. And everybody at the table nodded that they realized that it's a faith journey. Being a leader is an exercise in faith.
Mm.
And I tell the story also, I remember when my company was very young, and we were struggling with all these different, you know, being a spiritualpreneur, you're creating your own model of being able to honor God, honor yourself and your talents, and make a living doing that.
Right.
And so we finally got a meeting with this author, leader, who's very well known, who's sold about 100 times more books than me. And we were just sure that he was going to have the answer for us. And so we got to the meeting, flew in, and sat down at the table, and he and his number two guy said, we are so glad you're here because we're hoping that you can show us the next steps of what we need to do.
Oh, wow.
And I went, wait a minute. We came to the
That's why we hired you.
That's why we came to see you. And his number two guy just looked at us and laughed. He said, okay, there's nothing else to do. Let us bow our heads and pray.
Wow.
So here were these two people, you know, these two teams that were making waves at different levels,
right,
coming together thinking the other one would have the answer and getting there and realizing it's just still faith. And Jesus, when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, he was in over his head emotionally. He didn't want to die. He didn't want to do the next step. He was in over his head emotionally, and yet he prayed through it. So as an Omega leader, we need to realize that it's going to be faith. It's never going to be just a plotted out map of certainty, because that's not what leadership is. We can point the way, we can sense the way, we can pray the way, but it's always going to be a step of faith, the next direction. And I wrote in this chapter that it occurred to me that the only people I'm really interested in hanging around with are the ones who admit that they're in over their head.
Wow.
I don't want to be around people who know it all and have mastered it all and they're, you know, sitting on their throne in control. How short-sighted that is and how boring it is, because I want to be around people who are pushing the edge.
Mm. Wow. Very, very interesting topic. I wonder elementally, earth, water, wind, and fire for a second. walk us through what that must feel like and look like to the different elements to be in over your head?
Well, fire doesn't want to admit that, because fire is actually the most vulnerable of all the elements.
Right.
But it doesn't want anybody else to know that, because it can be put out by a breath of wind, it can be put out by water, and it can be put out by earth. So fire is perhaps the most ostensibly brilliant element. It's mesmerizing, it's engaging, it's crackling, it can't help but be the center of attention. And yet to be in over its head is probably the most uncomfortable for fire. The second element that would be most uncomfortable with that would be water. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, earth. Because earth likes to have it all together,
in
literally.
In a box, yeah.
In a box, balanced, measured. It can feel the edges all around it. It knows where it is. It knows where it stands, terra firma.
Right.
And so to be in over its head is chaotic, and it means that it's not in control. Both fire and earth are the control elements.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to remind people in the earth quadrant that earth in the beginning was without form and void, and the Spirit of God hovered over the face of the earth, and God spoke and said, light be, and light was. And so earth was created out of chaos, and that's what it needs to remember. Now, the wind never really feels
that's
over
a
its
scary,
head.
That's a scary image for a second.
What?
That the earth was created in chaos.
Right.
You know?
Right. And I think we need to remember that. The other thing is that wind is never really in over its head. It doesn't realize it. Wind is always in over its
exactly.
head.
Exactly.
Doesn't have all the facts. It's not grounded to anything. But that's the natural space for wind to be in, which is, on the fly, literally.
Sure.
Responsive, engaging, innovative, come up with it. You tell me what you need and I'll say that we have it, and then we'll go get the
right.
other people to invent it.
Right.
And then water. Still water runs deep. And so water, I think, sometimes gets shortchanged in the leadership modules because we think that it's always just concerned about feelings, and that makes it seem shallow, like it needs to be popular. But the water runs deep. We're barely discovering new creatures that, we've been around on this planet for how many years, and we still don't know the depths of the oceans and what goes on there with the creatures. So the water goes deep into the heart of the soul of people, and we need to respect water being in over its head.
Very, very insightful when you look at it elementally. Being in over your head could be suffocating. It could be discouraging. It could be, exhilarating. It could be all those things. But I think somehow and sometimes how we show up elementally determines how well we handle that in over our headedness in a situation. So speaking from a leader position, is it a safe place to be? Is it a comfortable place to be when you know that you're every day you show up at work or in your organization or company or church or school, realizing that this is a greater task than what I can do?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with that as a leader?
Well, it could be very stress inducing if you don't remain in Christ. That we've talked so much about remain. Jesus said, remain in me as I remain in you. And that's your grounding right there, is being in the vine. So if it's stress-relating, stress-inducing, if you think you have to come up with the answers.
Right.
Because Jesus said, unless you're inside me, you cannot bear fruit.
Mm.
But it's natural to bear fruit. And so I was just thinking about this today, when there's so many things swirling around that are really out of my control, that I'm just remaining. I'm just, happy in the moment to be in Christ. And at some point, you can't try to figure it all out. And the deeper you get into leadership, the more you realize you cannot figure it all out. But there will be a light that guides you.
Right.
And that's Christ.
Yeah, and in this chapter you talk about some leaders, David and Moses, Elijah, Jeremiah, others in the Bible who were in over their heads, you know, and talking about how David, these people are too much for me. You know, how many of us have been in situations where we've just been exhausted by people and we can't do it anymore. And I think, you know, maybe in the next chapter you talk about when you went to visit your mom and you were just crying. You felt a little bit in over your head and like surrendering, and maybe you ended up surrendering it and letting those people go. But, you know, it's part of the journey. It's part of the development of an Omega leader to realize that you need more than yourself.
Right.
And so how do we get that? How do we get the more than ourselves involved and engaged in the vision, in the process, in the task? How do leaders gather that?
Well, I think, you know, we teach this in the coaching program that you approach the world with a sense of curiosity and awe instead of having to know. And so you wake up every day and just, I'm in awe of today. I'm curious as to what God's going to reveal today. You have that childlike notion of being waiting to be shown as opposed to charging into it, you know, with a Krav Maga.
With a cross and a switchblade.
Yes. The Krav Maga, you know, disarming people with your moves. So it's really a sense of childlike wonder and delight and being open to people. Sometimes I pray, God, show me what you see in this person.
Mm.
And just delighting in others. It's a wonderful way to be
instead
of thinking you have to control them.
Yes. So being in over our head isn't necessarily a bad thing until when?
Until we take our eyes off our rock, then we go under.
Yeah.
Blurb.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we could look at a situation in our nation a few years ago where a lot of people were in over their heads.
Right.
And it took a lot of time to get there. Maybe they were not looking at the signs around them. Maybe they weren't thinking elementally. Maybe they weren't thinking as an Omega leader. But they ended up in a situation where, you know, it nearly devastated our country financially.
Right.
So at what point, you know, does a leader say, okay, we're in over our heads, but we've got our eye on the prize?
Well, and I got swept up in that too, you know, in the economic devastation of the Phoenix real estate market and all of that, but I'm still standing. Here I am, you know. So you go back to your first love, and that is communicating divine connection with Christ and being willing to surrender. I mean, you've got to let it all go. It was just so hard, and I write in subsequent chapters and books that the hardest thing to let go of for me was the story about myself that I was writing,
wow.
or thought I was writing. So when you can let go of this narrative that you think you have and say, okay, maybe this isn't the story that I thought it was going to be. It could be a relationship's ending, or, you know, child didn't turn out the way you thought and you wanted the story to be a certain way, but God is writing in us and through us. And so then you sit back and say, okay, what is this story going to be? I'm open to being handed some new lines here, Lord, because I don't know what the part is anymore.
Well, I think this is a good segue into the next topic here. He knew he could cry if he wanted to. But before we jump there, there's an interesting question at the end of this chapter. What landmarks have disappeared, you know, as a result of being in over your head? I think that's a powerful question. And maybe it's elemental, I don't know. But I think about change. If something is different, then there's been change, right? And it just kind of struck me as a powerful question to just ponder, you know, what if everything changed suddenly? Job, career, family, relationships. Mm-hmm. And the whole landscape was totally different. we would for sure know we were in over our heads. But I think, like you just said, it's a fresh palette.
Right.
It's a new beginning. It's a way to start over and rebuild. So you can get to the over your head again, I guess. I don't
right.
know. But very, very, very powerful question. I love that question at the end of the chapter. So moving right into Jesus knew that he could cry if he wanted
right.
to.
Right. We're in the book, Jesus Entrepreneur.
Yes, Jesus Entrepreneur.
For
listeners, yeah. We're using five of Lori's books make up the Omega Leader series. And we are in the third book of that series right now as we're making our way through this process of Omega Leadership. And in Jesus Entrepreneur, he knew he could cry if he wanted to. Tell us, what did Jesus cry about?
Well, it's the reference there is that song by Leslie Gore that I grew up hearing. Baby boomers can relate to it. It's my party and I'll cry if I want to.
Exactly.
And she was crying because she'd had a birthday party, and then her boyfriend comes and leaves with someone else, and she ends up crying at her own party. And I talk about Jesus wet weeping.
Mm-hmm.
He threw a party and was rejected by his own people. Mm-hmm. And he knew that he could cry. He wept. He wept in the Garden of Gethsemane. And it's okay to show emotion and realize that God felt that too. Jesus felt that too. But it is our party. And I think that's what I'm trying to get to in this chapter, that if we're not throwing the party, who is?
Right.
And I think so many people come into the world or a situation expecting to be the guest. And what will flip it for you is if you see yourself as the host.
Mm.
And Jesus saw himself as the host.
Hmm.
And so rather than, you know, even people going to church, well, it didn't feed me or I didn't get what I wanted. But what if you switched it around and said, I came to give? You know, what can I contribute? What banquet can I lay out here? As opposed to, well, what's being given to me? This whole sense of entitlement that we have, I think, as Americans and as consumers and sometimes as leaders. You know, we expect to be treated a certain way.
Sure.
I remember when the government shut down years ago, they said part of it was because one of the speakers of the House didn't get invited to sit in the front part of Air Force One. And it was just those ego clashes. And so they're willing to take down a whole government because of the ego needs. And that's very fire-like.
Right.
We don't get our way. Someone hurts our feelings. So we withhold information from them or we make them look bad. So that's a sense of entitlement and privilege that does not please the Lord, who calls us to be shepherds and servant leaders.
Wow. Powerful. Powerful insight. This particular verse in Matthew, one of the shortest verses in the Bible, Jesus wept. I'm trying to just gather here in my head real quickly, you know, sermons or, you know, lectures or workshops that really taught us about how Jesus wept and why was Jesus weeping over Jerusalem and, you know, his tears became blood in the garden. But we don't really linger there too much, do we, on Jesus's prayers and...
Well, fires don't. You know, the evangelicals and people who like the judgmental side of God don't want to focus on that compassion and what they see as vulnerability. I think culturally men are taught they're not supposed to cry, they're not supposed to weep, and it's really harmed them, I think, and many people will agree. And with women crying, for some reason, we're made that way because we feel... You know, we have less of a division in our brain. I think that men can segment and compartmentalize in ways that women can't because information flows from the left to the right side more freely, supposedly, in women's brains. So we have that emotional connection that maybe men are able to shut off to their own detriment. So the notion of a God weeping could seem like a weakness.
Right.
You know, instead of Thor, the thunder god, and all of that. And I think that's what made him so precious. And he felt so deeply, even the baby bird that had fallen to the ground, and noticing the hairs on an old man's head, that sensitivity, just that pulsating, walking energy of taking in others' emotions. This is another reason why I think Jesus was a wind-water personality type. Right. My sister is a water, and she'll take in the pain of the whole group. I mean, she can feel what other people are feeling, and they're doing studies on this, what they call empathic personalities, which I think are waters, and they think they have mirror neurons in their brain so that not only do they feel what they're feeling, but the mirror picks up what's going on in the room around them.
Mm.
So it's a hard place to be when you feel that kind of emotion. And I know when we do our trainings and we have people, we teach them how to teach the path and the four elements, and that, you know, I say you have to drop all of your ego shields to be a good facilitator.
Mm.
And that means you're just responsive energy, sensing the energy in the room and what people are going through. And then at the end of that workshop, though, you have to draw apart and let your shield go back up, because otherwise you're too vulnerable to walk out into the world the next day.
Right.
Because you've
right.
dropped that defensiveness, that shield of identity.
Mm.
In order to be open to others. And so you need to kind of regather that.
Some friends and I were just having lunch earlier today, and afterwards we were talking about this, the element of water, you know, and just how compassionate and how, you know, she spends a lot of her pastoral time with people and absorbing, you know, what's going on. This mirror that you're talking about, and it just becomes, you know, it's exhausting, you know. So when you do that day after day, year after year, and you take that on, that is a huge gift, right?
Yes.
But it's also a huge cross, and you somehow have to be okay with, you know. I guess with crying and allowing that to move into your space and out of your spirit, but wow, what a different kind of gifting that is.
Yes, yes. And waters are going to have boundary issues, and I remind them, you know, in Genesis, God said, "You go the shores. Water goes. You're supposed to go this far and no further." You know, the water has to learn its boundaries. And be able to say, okay, this is where I stop. This is where I cannot solve this for you. This is where you're going to have to feel this. This is where you're going to have to walk through this. I can't take it all on. And, you know, when you think about Jesus and the people he didn't heal and the people he didn't reach and the people that still went hungry, that must have been so hard for him.
Right, right.
And yet he was able to say, it is finished.
Hmm.
He did what he came here to do, and that is why we're so emphatic about people getting clear about their mission, because it gives you permission to say, no, this is not where I'm called to go.
That's right.
And feel good about it, because you cannot be all things to all people and still keep your humanity.
Mm-hmm. Very powerful. In this chapter, Lori, you talk about this space where you went to your mom and you were crying, and she finally asked you what's the problem. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Well, it was right when I was about to write Jesus CEO, and I sensed that my life was going to change, that I wouldn't be able to sustain the advertising agency, that I'd brought in investors. I had 6 employees, and it was so devastating. I had to give up a story that I was going to be this big ad agency writer, and now I'm called to go out in a desert and write a book about Jesus nobody seems to want. And it was just a profound catharsis for me that I had to surrender. And, you know, I went out and measured where I was going to put my trailer in mom's backyard, because that's where I was going to live, and she told me I could not live there and get back on the plane. So she helped get that shell back on me, you know, and sent me back out. But we have moments like that, and in the vulnerability, that's the beauty. When we look at the heroes in movies, you've got to love their vulnerability, mm-hmm. or else they're just icons that don't really touch people.
So, as leaders, as Omega leaders, we know sometimes we get in over our head, and that's okay. Sometimes we can cry at our own part,
right.
And that's okay. So thank you so much, Lori. Any last thoughts here for us as we close today?
Just to see the beauty in the vulnerability and see the beauty in not knowing and remain in Christ, knowing that you are known and loved.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Lori Beth, for sharing with us again this week. We will be back next week with more on the Omega Leader series.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thanks.
Great show.
Bye-bye.